This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
If you think consulting, you probably think of McKinsey & Company, a firm that's nearly 100 years old, more than 40,000 employees, a firm with an alumni network of more than 34,000 working in just about every business sector out there, 120 countries. You know, alum, household names, Sheryl Sandberg, Chelsea Clinton, current CEOs of Citigroup, Alphabet, and Morgan Stanley. McKinsey, the firm, safe to say in many ways, is in its own right, a household name. Tim, it's also the subject of a new book. It's entitled When McKinsey Comes to Town, The Hidden Influence of the World's Most Powerful Consulting Firm.
The book co-written by Walt Bogdanich and Michael Forsyth. We've got Walt Bogdanich, who's an investigative reporter from the New York Times, on the phone with us, joining us from New York City. Walt, really good to have you with us. Congratulations on this book. As you and Michael write, McKinsey has advised tobacco and vaping companies, I think Juul, purveyors of opioids, repressive governments, oil companies, and more. The challenge, though, in reporting something like this is that McKinsey is a privately held company, and it's not a company that necessarily talks a lot to the press. Take us through your process here and really big picture what you found.
Well, when we started, we knew it would be a challenge because McKinsey's entire business model is based on secrecy. You know, never disclose our client list, never disclose what they pay us. And they're hugely powerful. I mean, they have no accountability. And what we wanted to do was look at this secretive company, see what we could find, and find out whether, you know, they're doing good things or bad things. That's what journalists do.
That's true, right? That's what they're supposed to do. Walt, you did get a hold of that McKinsey client list, which they do hold near and dear. So what did it, as you went through it, what did it reveal to you?
I think we were most interested in the conflicts of interest that emerged from that list. These are conflicts of interest that would never have been known. What kind of conflicts I'm talking about? Well, you know, advising, you know, the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world at the same time that they're advising the Food and Drug Administration. That would seem to be a major problem. They were advising all the big cigarette companies at a time when they were advising the Office of Smoking and Health or Office of Smoking within the FDA. So those are glaring examples that we would not have learned about until if we had not obtained that list.
Walt, is there any type of work that McKinsey won't take?
Well, these days, I think they'll say yes. But I mean, I won't know until I see the proof. I mean, what they did, and to their credit, and let's see whether they carry through on it. After a lot of the exposés that were in the media, mostly in the Times, you know, they decided to change. They decided to screen their clients more carefully and to monitor them, to do a better risk assessment. You know, how well that's working, how, you know, thoroughly they are engaged in that new policy. I hate to use the cliche, time will tell, but time will tell.
Well, Walt, one thing, you know, you have three Pulitzer Prizes for your investigative journalism. You've produced stories for 60 Minutes, ABC News, The Wall Street Journal, both here in New York City, also out of the nation's capital. Why is it that you've written about a lot of stuff, and there's been a lot of things that have gone wrong, you know, since the financial crisis, before the financial crisis? Why did you want to home in on McKinsey in particular?
Well, I guess there's two answers. One of them is that it is big and powerful and secretive and influences our lives in ways that most people don't know. That's one of them. But in fact, that's probably the biggest one. And that's catnip for investigative reporters. Sure, there's a lot of things to look at, but, you know, that's one of the biggest. Also, inequality is one of the huge issues in our society today. It's tearing apart the country. You know, I began gathering evidence indicating that McKinsey played a role in that. and aggravating and accelerating that trend. And I thought that was important to report, and we did.
It's interesting. You know, it still attracts people who, you know, perform at the top of their class when it comes to business school. You know, when I went to business school, the place that people wanted to work was McKinsey. Is there any indication, and that wasn't that long ago, is there any indication, Walton, we just have a minute left and then we'll come back with you, that has shifted at all because people really want to work for this firm?
Well, they want the best and the brightest, and they pretty much limited themselves to what they considered the best schools, you know, the Ivy Leagues. But it's interesting. Recently, I got word that they're now recruiting at CUNY Law, and that CUNY's a great, you know, law school, but it doesn't typically serve the kinds of clients that McKinsey wants. So I think that may indicate that there's changes afoot.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With us is are the authors, I should say, of When McKinsey Comes to Town, The Hidden Influence of the World's Most Powerful Consulting Firm. We've been talking with one of the authors, Walt Bogdanich, and joining us right now is Michael Forsyth, both investigative reporters for The New York Times. Michael, a former Bloomberg News journalist, we wanted to point out as well, both of them on the phone in New York City. And Michael, you know, we've been talking with Walt about why you guys did the book, concerns about, you know, potential conflict, getting that client list and what it revealed to you. One thing I did want to share is that McKinsey has actually put out a statement, and it's on their website. It's in the media section, and it says, quote, "A recently published book fundamentally misrepresents our firm and our work. The book also seeks to associate our firm with events like the 2008 financial crisis, a Major League Baseball cheating scandal, or safety incidents at a theme park that we simply had nothing to do with. Perhaps this is why the book contains more than a dozen disclaimers across these and other issues, acknowledging that our work did not cause or was not associated with the trend or event for which the authors criticize us." And I would love for maybe both of you to weigh in on this. Michael, why don't you take it first?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, McKinsey did put out that statement the day we published the book. You know, we in the book look at so many issues across the world, you know, where McKinsey has had a very big impact and in many cases a very negative impact. South Africa, China, Saudi Arabia, you know, looking at the opioid crisis, their work with tobacco companies. There are so many instances where they did have a big impact. I don't think we ever would have written this book if we didn't think McKinsey made a difference. And of course, there are many, many projects at McKinsey, many things that we never hear about because, you know, they go fine and they do plenty of good work as well. But like Walt often likes to say, you know, as journalists, we don't write about the aircrafts that safely take off and land. We write about the crashes.
Right.
And the fact is that at McKinsey, there are so many airplane crashes, so to speak. And that's what we've compiled in the book. It's more than just a one-off incident.
Hey, Michael, what did you guys find about the company's financials? And, you know, I think a lot of people hear about, you know, at least in my experience, have learned about and hear about the consultants who spend 4 or 5 days on the road working on secretive projects and traveling to different places for a year at a time, for example, and maybe doing that for a few years, and then they get into their 30s and they go off and they do something else and, you know, potentially become a CEO of a different company. What about the partners who stay there, and how is their wealth tied to these projects?
You know, so they're very well paid, maybe not as well paid as a private equity, you know, partner or, you know, a hedge fund manager or the CEO of a bank on Wall Street. But, you know, we're talking millions of dollars, you know, $3, $4 million for senior partners at times, so, you know, or even more. So they're well compensated. You know, they also can invest. There's an internal hedge fund called the McKinsey Investment Office where they can put their money as well. So, you know, they're well paid. But as you said, a lot of people do leave McKinsey and go on to do other things. And, you know, many CEOs of Wall Street Bank, the CEO of Morgan Stanley is a former McKinsey consultant.
Hey, Walt, come on back in. Tell us about who you talked to, both of you, who you talked to do some of this book. A lot of, I'm assuming, right, former McKinsey insiders.
I'm glad you asked that question, because every McKinsey consultant signs a non-disclosure agreement. That's a tall mountain for us to climb. We don't have subpoena power. But let me tell you this, we kept digging and digging, and by the end of it, we interviewed nearly 100 current and former McKinsey consultants, which I think is astounding. And the reason we did that is because McKinsey hires, by and large, responsible, you know, idealistic people, the best at the schools where they recruit. And when you hire those kinds of people and they see a difference between what they were told when they were hired and the McKinsey's actions in the real world, they get unhappy. And fortunately, they were able to find our phone numbers and they called us.
Walt, have you heard from more folks at McKinsey or formerly at McKinsey since the book came out?
I would say like in the last 10 minutes, yes.
Wow.
From around the world. And they, you know, at this point, you know, what are we going to do with that? I don't know. But we're certainly collecting it. And if after discussing it with our editors, we decide there's more to be written, we will write.
So, Michael, it raises the question about some sort of internal change or soul searching happening at the firm in the wake of you publishing this book. Carol mentioned the statement and read the statement in full, which again, you can find on McKinsey's website in the media section. But do you get any sense that McKinsey has changed or will change?
Well, they did make some changes. And it wasn't after we published the book. It was around 2019, after we had published quite a few stories about them, including their work with Purdue Pharma. And they changed the way they select clients. At least he said they did. And they have more people reviewing, potential new clients or new projects to make sure that there's not a reputational risk, to the firm.
But is there is my question. Is there an indication that that's happening in a material way?
It's really hard for us to tell. Of course, they've said they no longer work with opioid makers. They no longer work with tobacco. That just happened last year. So there are some areas where they just don't work anymore. They're a little more stringent, they say, on working with authoritarian governments as well.
I think it's important to point out that the managing partner who pushed for these changes, Kevin Snyder, was voted out of office after they went into effect. So I don't think that these changes were universally popular over at McKinsey, because it limits the amount of money that's coming into the firm. And he now works at Goldman Sachs. So, you know, he went from one well-paying job to another.
Walt, is it fair to say that it's just, you know, in an era where we all don't maybe totally get the relationships? I'm thinking about, we talk about cryptocurrencies and Matt Levine's massive piece in the current issue of Bloomberg Business Week magazine, this whole idea of this need for transparency so that we all know either what we're working for, what the company stands for, or what kind of relationships are going on. I mean, I'm just saying, it's just kind of a call, Walt, for greater transparency. You just got about 20, 30 seconds.
Yes, I agree, particularly when, you know, a consultant like McKinsey is working for the government. Accountability is a must. Taxpayers want to know what their government is doing with their money. And when McKinsey's doing a lot of the government work and being quiet about it, that's a problem.
Well, we all appreciate both of you joining us on this Friday afternoon. Walt Bogdanich and Michael Forsyth, they are the authors of When McKinsey Comes to Town, The Hidden Influence of the World's Most Powerful Consulting Firm, investigative reporters for the New York Times, award-winning journalists. Interesting.
Really, really interesting stuff. Really appreciate them taking the time and coming on. Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.